It's surprising how much software is working its way into all kinds of products. Now, of course, there's some packages and products that are completely software and that just happen to run on some hardware. But things like the Google Documents allows you to, with a browser, have a word processor or a spreadsheet or so on. Although all of this software has to run on some physical manifestation of a server or a computer or, say, a dedicated piece of equipment, whether we call it firmware or software or middleware or whatever ware we call it, it's usually a series of commands and codes that directs the physical elements connected to that software to work, whether that's a keyboard and display or it's a piece of equipment in your factory. The amount of software that's going into our cars these days is growing by leaps and bounds. Besides navigation systems and communication systems, there's an increasing number of sensors that are working in concert with the driver to operate the vehicle. And in the future, we may see self-driving cars that even more so rely on the software and the prowess of the software developers to create a robust package that can handle a great range of different situations. But software is one of those things that's, in many regards, can be considered a component of your product. So when we get to the modeling section, I often advise my clients to include a box for software, specifically the operating system or the controls elements of their product. The idea, though, is that software can cause your product to fail. Now, like using standard parts or an approved vendor list, using blocks of software code that we know works, that we've used on previous products, and will provide the same or similar functions for the new product, goes a long way towards ensuring that that chunk of the software, at least, is going to be reliable. Now, there's a catch, much like with the hardware side, is that as we change the product or its application, the types of stresses that it sees may change also. So even though it's commonly done and it generally is very, very helpful to achieve your reliability goals, using older software and reusing it, while it has many advantages, does have the chance of running against one of the boundaries or limitations of that software. So the due course of reviewing the code, reviewing the application and product testing, it still applies, but it usually streamlines the process very much. Now, sometimes we want to go off and just purchase software. And let's see, I think I skipped a slide. Nope, I guess not. Sometimes we want to purchase software. So it may be a set of controlling drivers for the equipment we're running, or a motion detector type system, or a whatever it is. And it may be available off the shelf. Now, it may work just as it is. It really depends on how flexible our particular application is and how well the commercial packages work for our situation. Streamlining data analysis, for example, on your database, and showing your users metrics of performance, for example, or adding a spell check to a package. Those may be able to be, you might be able to find those off the shelf and just add them to your software package into your product. But in other cases, you may need some programmers to tweak or update that particular package and make it semi-customized for your particular application. So as soon as you start doing that, you start losing some of the robustness that's built into a commercial package that's ready to go. Of course, that's making the assumption that the commercial package is robust. You could be making it better or making it worse, but in general, we're increasing the risk the more custom coding that we do. Then the third option, obviously, is have your own programmers or purchase the services of a bunch of programmers to create the software for you. Now, all of the usual project management tools apply, especially setting up the right requirements. What is this software supposed to do, and what is it not supposed to do? And making sure that that's clear can help you with all three of these different ways of creating software. But it is especially important when you and your team are doing it yourself. Now, I'm no software expert, and there's so much more to software reliability, including the hurdle where many people believe that software doesn't have a reliability component. Now, just my definition is that if the software, if a customer experiences a failure and it's caused purely by the software, whether a register loses some data or a buffer fills up or it is confused and by the inputs it's receiving or for whatever reason, but the software can cause a failure. And at that point, it's an expense. It's either a call to the call center, it's a lost functionality for the customer, it's a warranty return. It becomes real in real quick time. Now, I don't care what you call it, whether it's a quality issue or a software issue or a bug or a reliability issue, if it still causes your customer to experience a failure of your product, to me, it's a reliability issue. Now, I haven't had the chance to get all that involved with software issues in the past, so I'm by no means an expert in that area. But many of the basic tools that we use for hardware reliability and system reliability apply to software. The language might be a little bit different, but the basic idea is that we need to have a goal and a set of criteria in which to measure and judge the performance of our software. Next section, here it is the derating methods, and this is specific for electrical engineers.